Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for January 9th, 2020, moving fast into this decade. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Iran situation. I'll preface this by saying I was a guest on two different radio shows yesterday. Of course, John Moore in the morning, Wednesday, always first hour on Wednesdays. And then also the Power Hour. This was the second Wednesday of the month, and I'm always the guest on. And I believe, from what they said, that it would air tomorrow. I'm sorry, today. It would tomorrow being yesterday. Did the interview yesterday, so I'm not sure which day it's actually going to be in the archives. But I was on the Power Hour show. The interview occurred yesterday with Daniel Brigman. And we talked a lot about the Virginia situation and then at the end about the Iranian situation. But I wanted to clarify something. Now, I've listened to lots of news, read a lot of news stories from many different perspectives about the situation in Iran. And let's do a little bit of history, real history. I heard Hannity talk and go on and on about the history of Iran and the terrorism and things like that. But make no mistake about it, this has been a hotbed of CIA activity in the Middle East for decades and decades, since I was young. And this is mainly it's centered around the dependency of the United States on oil. So it's a benefit, it's a tremendous benefit of the United States not to be embroiled in dependency on fossil fuels. Of course, fossil fuels is a misnomer, but on oil that comes from the Mideast. We don't depend on it anymore, but the CIA meddling in the Mideast was over oil. Now, back in the Afghan war days, that was the Afghan war was started because here's the scenario. Russia was taking oil out of the basin of the Caspian Sea, which is north of Iran. The United States wanted to put a pipeline across Iran, but of course they couldn't because of the difficulties that the longstanding difficulties between the United States and Iran. So they put the pipeline across Afghanistan, and they could not keep the pipeline running because of basically local, I wouldn't call them terrorists, I would just call them local, like, sheiks out there in the middle of nowhere, and their merry band of, you know, people. All it takes is a high-powered rifle, shoot a hole in the tube and the pipe that carries the oil from the Caspian Sea down to the ocean where they were going to load it on ships. So the reason for going into Afghanistan was to, number one, secure the oil pipeline using military force, using your tax dollars and your sons and daughters. And secondly, to secure the poppy fields, which was the primary location for heroin in the CIA drug trade. And so that fed into Europe. And so anyway, that was the big reason for going into Afghanistan. It wasn't due to weapons of mass destruction. Remember, they had to go into Iraq. And the two things that, well, I'm not going to go into all the details in Iraq, but back to Iran. So basically, the United States, via its proxy agency, the CIA, has been meddling in Iran for decades and decades. And Iran is a fairly big country, if you're not familiar with the landscape over there, and a fairly powerful country. But at any rate, finally, the people in the locality over there, the locals, are saying, get out, Americans. And Trump is saying, yeah, let's get out of there. What are we doing here? So this is, in this little exchange, by the way, the point I made, and I'm going to make this again to make it very clear, this Soleimani guy that they sent a drone in and took him out and a bunch of his associates that were in Iraq, not Iran, were in Iraq planning on another embassy attack when they were somewhat taken out. But at any rate, if the CIA, let me make this point extremely clear, minimally, if the CIA had been doing its real jobs, its nameplate job of protecting United States interests abroad, this Soleimani guy would have been neutralized decades ago. He's been for probably 30 years roaming the Mideast, creating terrorism and responsible for the death of, they say, 603 Americans, and also in Iraq, etc. And of course, the United States going into Iraq was a giant mistake. It was to get the oil. It wasn't to help little girls, schoolgirls go to school. What a ridiculous, they destroyed that country, you know. And so anyway, the Mideast, the Benghazi issue once again was a CIA hit job via Hillary Clinton, because the people at the embassy knew that the CIA and the Justice Department, the Department of State, let me make that clear, the Department of State under Obama, created ISIS. They created the terrorist group ISIS that was ravaging the Mideastern countries there, including Iran. They created that group of, that were just running ragged through the Mideast there. Obama and the CIA created that, created ISIS. And so the real history of Iran is steeped in mismanagement by the CIA. It's just the very simple history. So you can talk about the terrorism and everything else, but that's the real story. And so when the point I'm making here is that the CIA was responsible for the success of Soleimani. They allowed this guy, just like the EPA in the United States allows pollution, the CIA allowed this guy through decades to carry on his dirty work. And were part and parcel. In fact, one could easily make a case that they not only let it happen, but they actually supported this guy. So, and Trump took him out. And so this is a call to the CIA saying that, okay, they're not going to play their game over there anymore. And of course, one of the CIA efforts was to keep the United States steeped in controversy and dependency on Mideast oil. And this goes back to the CIA is the proxy agency for the World Bank. The World Bank wants the United States especially and Europe to be dependent on foreign energy imports. And the United States was until Trump came along. And that's why they hate Trump. I mean, he's done so many things that are not in the best interest of the world bankers. So that's a little bit of history of Iran that you're not going to hear anyplace else. And I try and stay away from political issues, geopolitical issues, etc. But when you don't get the real news elsewhere, I don't care where I've listened, I have not heard anybody break it down and give the real story. Remember the Iran-Contra. This is just one of many, many incidents where the CIA was running drugs and guns, and it involved Iran and the Contras in Central America and Nicaragua and other Central American countries at the time. But the Central American countries, those were the staging grounds. Remember a guy named Noriega, CIA trained in Virginia. They put him in power in Nicaragua, and that's where they were flying. That was the midway stop-off point for flights from the South American cocaine traffic, the CIA cocaine traffic coming into Mena, Arkansas, where Bill Clinton was governor, and Hillary the axe lady was the one who basically laundered the money through the Rose Law Firm and through real estate deals that went bad. Remember the, you know, this just goes on and on. But the Iran-Contra deal was under the Reagan administration. And there again, it was the CIA meddling in those countries. So they have good reason to be angry at Americans. They've been really jacked around because of the CIA, which is housed in the United States. Okay, so enough of that. Here's something. Neil deGrasse Tyson, I'm sure most of you have heard of this joker. He's a guy that is a protege of Carl Sagan. Carl Sagan was the spokesperson for the astro, let's call him the cosmos or the cosmology or the astrophysics community. He's the guy that gets up and touts the Big Bang and all this other garbage, biological evolution, celestial evolution, and the Big Bang and it all, you know, all of this. If you remember, Carl Sagan did the original Cosmos series and Cosmos book, which has sold worldwide. Something like 600 million people have seen the Cosmos series worldwide. But Neil deGrasse Tyson redid the series, basically mimicking everything that Sagan said. And in my paid cast, I spent about 20 weeks dissecting the Cosmos series. So if you have not seen my paid cast, I suggest you join and go listen to the paid cast dealing with the Cosmos series. But the point here, Neil deGrasse Tyson, I saw an advertisement. He's coming out with a new series in which he claims there are various types of truth and reality, and then there's a ultimate truth of which he's going to teach you. And of course, I can tell you from from history, from understanding where these people are coming from, they put him out there to try and spin this message as some kind of gospel truth of evolutionary biology, cosmological evolution, the Big Bang, etc. And he's going to try and convince you that you can figure out that this is true. But you have to understand that all of this so-called science is based on secondary and tertiary interpretation of data. It's circumstantial evidence at best. An interpretation of data that goes back, and when the data comes in and it's contradictory to their little theories, then they either change the theory a little bit or sweep the data under the rug or come out with a new name, and then everything goes back to normal again. So Neil deGrasse Tyson, what I'm going to do is take each one of his episodes and break it apart again for you. And I'll probably be doing this through my Patreon channel. So that's coming along. And by the way, if you want to go see my Patreon channel, it's just been launched, so it's just kind of getting off the ground. There's a couple donors there so far. And I'll be putting, I think one of the original offers ended today, the first 30-day offering. And so I'll be reviewing and revising those, so there'll be other offers in the future. But I'll be targeting this Neil deGrasse Tyson series through my Patreon channel. So I guarantee you it's going to be filled with fluff and butter and slippery logic, circular logic, etc. And so that's what I'm going to point out, because they have nothing to stand on except slippery circular logic. Here's just a quick story about solar plant in Nevada. You remember that big solar plant? It looks like something out of The Hobbit with the big, it's got an eye, just like the all-seeing eye. And remember The Lord of the Rings? And at the end, you see this Tower of Doom sticking up with a big eye. Well, that's what this thing looks like out in the Nevada desert. It's got thousands of mirrors that change angle with the sun and direct the sun's energy up to the top of this tower, where that's converted into heat, where then that converts into electrical energy. But the plant became obsolete, and the cost of producing electricity with this plant is like five times the cost of producing electricity with photovoltaic cells, in other words, solar panels. And so anyway, the story is that this solar plant became obsolete before it even came online. But the other issue is that solar panels that are allegedly replacing this are only going to last, they're selling contracts out to 25 years. But I'm sure the fine print is going to allow these people to slide out of these contracts once the solar panels start to break down. And that's inevitable. Amazon is leaving the United States storeless. Now, another series of stores, the Payless shoe store chain, is going, they're cutting out many of their brick and mortar stores because they're trying to sell and compete online, but they can't compete against Amazon. I've talked to people in major cities around the country in places that used to be hubs of activity of restaurants and bars and shops, high-end shops, and all kinds of little shops, say selling candles or selling, there's another store, Pier 1 Imports, which is closing a bunch of stores. And so anyway, the reason is because they can't compete with Amazon. Everybody's buying on Amazon. So there's a real problem when you have a single entity controlling the entire retail business. It used to be Walmart and Target and a few other chain stores, but Walmart. And now there's these are not even able to compete against Amazon. I have a particular qualm with Amazon and the deals they get for shipping product, because they can ship a water filter, for, even though it's a lesser quality. I don't sell my water filters on Amazon. I thought about doing it, but I don't like their policies where they use you to advertise other people's products that cost less or maybe are cheaper. I don't like Amazon at all. I don't like dealing with these giant companies. But destroying the local retailer is a bad thing, because those local retailers, those small businesses, employ a lot of people. So you're ending up with one massive retail outlet called Amazon. And also, when you're in the book business like I am, there are people selling my books, used books, on Amazon. They're allegedly used, but I don't sell on Amazon. I only sell on my own webpage, and I could probably potentially sell more on Amazon, but there again, I feel that not everybody should have to go sell on Amazon as a way to get their products to the public. Just a quick note. Everything is due to climate change, and this is the mantra that comes out. I've heard two stories in the last week. One was where the Australian wildfires were allegedly due to climate change. It's not true. They caught the people setting those fires. And, of course, not all of them. They say at least 20 people have been arrested setting wildfires in Australia. So it's not due to climate change. I'm sure they're having dry conditions, which they have, just like California. And then I saw another one where turbulence in airplanes is being blamed on climate change. It's easy to take a single incident like a hot day in the Midwest or an unseasonably warm period in, say, the upper Midwest, or even a cold, rainy time in a certain state. And everything is going to be due to climate change. And the thing is, you know, we should not be burning as much energy as we do. We should not be polluting. We should not be throwing plastic bottles in the ocean, or straws even. And those should be things that you don't really need a special law for. Those should be just common sense. But, you know, the world as it's going, and I've talked about this before, for example, in 20 or 30 years, are we going to have 50G telephone service? Are they going to be selling, you know, are your grandchildren, their lot in life will be developing new applications for the 50G cellular telephone service that's, you know, going to be coming along in 30 to 40 years? Where's this all going to end? Where's it going? What does it mean? Is there really a meaning to life? Is there life after 5G? You know, the whole issue of what are we doing? What are we doing with our time on this planet? You know, just to have everybody employed I think it's a good goal for where society is today, because that's about the best you can do. If people are employed, then they are in an independent. They can buy a place to live. They can have that common denominator money, which allows them to buy food. They're no longer dependent on the government. So employment is a good thing, but how far is it going to go? I mean, how long are we going to build new cars every year? Pretty soon we're going to have electric cars that will last 30 years without repair, no oil changes, etc. You just plug in your car, and with energy from the wing generator, you know, transportation and energy will be things that we don't consider anymore. They won't be factors, and, you know, we have to, as a society, you know, the question is, what's after Trump? Trump is a person of the hour, and but where are things going to go in the future? Are we just going to continue to have 40-hour-a-week jobs for everybody, working in high tech and developing the latest personal computer or operating system or whatever? Interesting article I saw in CNN. A lot of times I go to the CNN webpage just to see what kind of garbage they're trying to pawn off on you, the public. But even CNN has criticized the impeachment bust. And that shocked me, because they were one of the primary proponents of that and the Mueller probe and everything else. And even they are saying what a ridiculous move this impeachment by the House. You know, everything that came out of that was just a fairy tale. And it literally dropped off the map like a lead brick, like a ship going over the edge of the ocean, you know, where there's fire-breathing dragons. It just was an absolute disaster. A quick note, scientists believe, you're going to see this in the news, so I want to prep you. But scientists believe, and I always love when the articles come out, scientists have discovered. Well, let's first of all, who are the scientists? And they make it sound like there's some concrete discovery when there is not. But anyway, they've claimed to have discovered, they think, where the location of a crater that was impacted 800,000 years ago. Now, how they come up with these numbers when they haven't even discovered the crater is a little bit iffy. But they're saying this is in southern Laos. It's a couple mile across crater. And really, in terms of craters, that's pretty small. But the around the world, they see streamers, they see regions where there are little things called tektites. They're little rocks, they're glassy rocks. And the question is, well, where did these come from? And of course, since they believe that comets are dirty snowballs, they couldn't come from a dirty snowball. So where did these come from? And the other possibility is that there were large electrical discharges that hit Earth and that there was not a collision with an asteroid. So there are other possibilities for the origin of tectites. So anyway, you're going to see that in the news. You're going to see that hyped. And really, there's no story there yet. They hype these things before there's real discovery. What the scientists have to do that are looking to confirm this, and I mean, I applaud people for doing science because people have identified craters around the world, and so if they identify a location where there was a deep impact type of crater, well, more power to them. But there are other potential possibilities, like a massive electrical discharge that created the tectites and blew them out of a hole. So those are other possibilities. Okay, I got to jump back a little bit here in my notes. I missed something when I was talking about Amazon taking over the United States and stores closing. This is just out today, another story on this topic. And they list many traditional stores, United States-based mall businesses, JCPenney's, Kohl's, Macy's, Sears, Victoria's Secret, as being losing sales and closing stores. And, of course, this is because the competition with Amazon, they quote that Walmart, Target, and Costco are the stores where people are buying a lot of stuff. Although Costco, you wouldn't really go there to outfit your family with clothes. They do have some clothes there, but not the kind that you would find at, say, Macy's or something like that, where they say TJ Maxx is increasing in sales. But interestingly enough, Kohl's is the first of these major stores to make a deal with Amazon. And so they have to buckle to Amazon to continue to stay in business. I would say this is not the American way. This is not an American way of doing business, where one dominant online company just forces everything, all industries. And of course, the ones I read off were in the clothing industry. Then there's Sears, that is having financial issues also, and of course they sell everything from tools to clothes to you know, lawnmowers, you know, all kinds of things, that the other stores don't sell at all, but also having problems financially because of Amazon, you know. And part of this issue is that these stores have to ship their goods to their store, then keep the storefront and employees. And Amazon doesn't have any of that. It just has a warehouse. And then the Amazon cuts a deal with the Postal Service, UPS, etc., where they deliver for almost nothing. And so this hurts me as a vendor, because it costs me, for example, some of my water, just a regular water filter, gravity feed water filter, can cost as much as $35 to send it, and I have free shipping. It's just ridiculous. So basically, I'm paying to support Amazon's habit, because they have to be losing money on Amazon. So all of the other businesses are supporting Amazon by paying these absolutely outrageous shipping costs and driving the consumer away from vendors like myself. So this is really bad, and the whole issue of a single organization like Amazon dominating the book and the publishing industry and all of these different industries where there used to be, even individuals online selling their own products being squeezed out. Just a quick note, Brexit got the okay from Parliament, and so that Brexit is on the way. I think that's a done deal. And I said that before, about a year ago, I started saying that, remember May, the woman, the Prime Minister, that she was on the way out because she was trying to forestall Brexit. And it's just something that's going to happen. And the European Union is going to basically break apart piece by piece because of centralization is basically what it is, where the individual countries no longer have a say, and it's this centralized governing body that nobody has any control over that's mandating all kinds of things, including immigration, including taxes, carbon tax, making international agreements, etc., and all kinds of things that are destroying these countries, and they have no say over it. So anyway, European Union was a good idea if it stuck with solidifying and unifying them economically in terms of trade, but that's not what happened. They went off into all kinds of different directions. Just another quick note on the Australian bushfires. I want to actually read this because, so I'm looking at this. Comes in actually from a listener who is a member of the airline industry. So I get these notices that go out privately to workers in the airline industries. But this is regarding the Australian bushfires. 4,300 insurance claims totaling over $300 million have been lodged since early November, it says. But the bill is going to climb much higher with still a month left to go in the dry season. The fires are due to natural causes, but the majority are due to criminal activity. They've made charges against 183 people, including 40 juveniles, and for 205 fires that were started by people. And then you see the news media trying to state that it's due to climate change. And then they talk about individual large resorts, etc., that were just completely burned to the ground, tourist areas completely destroyed. So this is just the initial physical damage. The long-term economic damage is yet to be determined. But the end result is there are people out there starting these fires. You know, 183 people, they've got a bit of an arson problem over there. They should not be selling matches or, propane lighters. They should be banned with that many people running around starting fires. Especially during the dry season. And, of course, with the winds, there have been ferocious winds every place recently around the world. Almost everybody you talk to has been experiencing high winds. And so with the high winds, there's just no way to stop a fire once it gets going, especially in a place like Australia. And also this just in Puerto Rico, the largest earthquakes in over 100 years. They just had a 5.8 followed by a 6.4. Now, I spent a good deal of time in Puerto Rico, and they have an average of 11 earthquakes per day, and that's because they sit along what's known as the Puerto Rican Trench. It's one of the deepest points in the ocean, but it goes, if you fly out of San Juan, you can see it. You fly out and you see blue water, and which is shallow, relatively shallow, and then all of a sudden there's just a line. It runs east to west, and it just drops down into this chasm. They don't even know how deep it goes. And that's a plate boundary that's constantly moving, and the good part is over having 11 earthquakes per day is they're very small. So you'd be sitting there eating a meal or something like that, and all of a sudden your glass would shake just a little. And this goes on 11 times per day on average. And so that keeps them from having these big earthquakes. But then eventually they're going to have some big ones, and so they just had these. They're talking about severe damage there. There's homes collapsing. Puerto Rico is a place with a lot of it's a very old volcanic soil. And so when it rains, it just slides over the road. So they have a lot of blocked roads. And there's something is called Punta Ventana. It's like a arched rock that was a popular tourist attraction, came crashing down also. So a lot of damage in Puerto Rico. And just another quick note about traveling in Israel and Palestine and the Mid East. The U.S. Embassy in Israel has issued an advisory urging Americans to avoid traveling in the areas of Israel and Palestine held territories, including Jerusalem, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip. And so I'm sure this extends into other areas also. There's indication this morning that the Iranians shot down that airliner from Ukraine, as it happened just hours after the barrage of missiles that were, I think, intentionally misguided, or somehow they certainly did not come anywhere near their targets. But very shortly after is when this Ukrainian aircraft came down, and it's believed now, a lot of people, the tendency now is to believe that it was actually shot down by Iran. And so I'm just repeating what I'm seeing in the news, but that would be something to keep an eye on. I want to spend a minute here talking about the wing generator, because a lot of people have written in and we're still getting back. If you have not heard back, if you've written in requesting information about the wing generator, just be patient. We're working through these, and we'll get back to everybody. Hopefully this weekend I'll personally be able to spend some time sitting down and responding to emails, getting information out to people. But I want to remind people that these are industrial-grade products. This is unlike anything anybody has ever seen before. And so I'm finding that people have some kind of a misconception, and that's okay. I just want to clarify that the wing generator, even the small ones, the 2 and the 3 and the 5 kilowatt wing generators and the 10 kilowatt wing generators, this is industrial grade equipment. And the electronics that goes with it. Now, let me just describe what you're used to seeing. If you went to the solar store, or you went to really there's nobody that sells wind generators anymore, seriously, on a small scale. So I'll just talk about solar panels. If you go to the solar panel store and try and buy something, the electronics are basically like 48 volt inverters, things like that. And you might buy a power wall where the inverter is incorporated into a lithium ion battery pack or something like that. But what I'm offering is nothing like that. It's and those systems are basically made for a single house system, and their energy level is pretty low. And so what I'm selling is something that's very different. The voltage ratings on my inverters and controllers they start at 120 volts. If you went to buy something online, say an inverter, you'd probably buy the maximum size voltage you would get would be 48 volt DC package, batteries, etc. So you'd get some wet cell lead acid batteries and put on there, and you could run relatively small loads. They might go up to a couple thousand watts or 2 kilowatts or something like that. And then there's some that are a little bit bigger, but they run a fan all the time, and they're a bit costly in energy usage just to run the inverters. But what I'm offering is something much larger than that. In terms of voltage, etc. So just want people to be aware that the small systems in terms of economy will not pay themselves back in a short term. Probably would take a number of years, but they are much more cost effective than putting in solar. And the very simple reason is because solar only works a couple hours of the day when the sun is shining. Even if you're in a sunny place like Phoenix,
you will get about what they call 4 solar hours per day. That's where you're getting 100% usage of the solar panels, and they're only 20% efficient. So they're only converting 20% of the sunlight into electricity, and that's for only 4 hours of the day. So what I'm offering with the wing generator is something, it's unlike anything anybody has seen before. So what I'm encountering when people, especially people that are educated relative to solar panels, etc., they don't understand that what I'm offering here is something that they have never seen before. They don't have a good concept. The advantage of using high voltage is that the wire size is small. So when you go and buy your 48 volt DC volt inverter that up converts to 120 or 240 volt AC, then you're using these massive big cables. And that's because it's low voltage and high current to get the amount of power you need to drive those 120 and 240 volt circuits. To me, that's so you need these short cables that are big. I mean, we're talking inch in diameter, sometimes larger. So they're big, heavy cables. And what I'm doing is high voltage. And so the cables you're using are small and flexible. And it's a whole different world, is what I'm saying. So, and people, don't have a good concept. So, part of my job when I start talking to people is to educate them relative to what the wing generator really does, and it's very efficient. And that wind is the only source of energy that will cure our energy problem. And unfortunately, this whole industry of wind has been tainted by the 3-blade wind turbines. Let me just go a little bit through the history of domestic or home or small wind turbines. People would sell them. Sometimes they would go down to 400 watts, these little things that spin. Sometimes you see them on a boat. Or you'll see one at somebody's cabin. It's a little, looks like it's about something about the size of a car alternator with a little propeller blade system on it, and they spin fast. But then as previously, people would sell up to 5 kilowatts. That would be a high-end home wind generator. But the problem was that they really were very difficult to maintain because for many, many reasons, they were not user-friendly. And as they got bigger, they got less efficient, and there was no payback. And the installers would go out to install these. So here you'd have this just regular guy that was in trying to work a business of home solar and wind. And he'd be climbing up this little teeny pole 50 feet in the air, hanging on for dear life, trying to service this wind thing that was way up in the air. So they just stopped doing it. They just stopped selling it. It was easier for them to go out and slap some solar panels on somebody's roof and walk away. And what the customers didn't know is that every year those solar panels are losing efficiency by about 1%. So that instead of 20%, after 10 years, they're only giving 10% of their energy. And of course, it wasn't enough for people to notice. And then of course, after that, the warranties have run out but the average person is only putting solar panels on their house as a grid connect. It's not something of all of the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of homes in California that had solar panels on their house, none of them had electricity when PG&E pulled the power because they're not set up for independent power. They don't have batteries, they don't have inverters, and very few people actually made that investment. And even if they did, they would need their entire roof covered with solar panels for it to provide enough energy to run their house. And so solar is not a solution. Even though they keep selling this like crazy, There's big solar installations going in. I just mentioned that solar plant, which is a solar heating plant in Nevada that went under. But when they write these contracts for solar installations, they'll write them out for 25 years. Well, those plants are not going to be operating in even 5 or 6 years, probably. Most of the solar panels will fail. They're not going to go out and fix them. To shut them down, they have to cover the solar panels. So they're really very difficult to maintain because you can't have them operating while somebody's trying to work on the circuitry. You can't disconnect them, so to speak. The other issue is that they get dirty. So the bigger the installation, the solar installation, the more difficult it's going to be over the long term to keep them clean so that they operate even when there is sun. So solar is not a solution. It's a they're there for the subsidies. The only reason the solar panel industry or the three-blade wind turbine industry is there is because of subsidies. You're paying for something that doesn't work. It's the bottom line. So anyway, back to the wing generator. What I've done, being a physicist, electrical engineer, I've taught electrical engineering at the basically the university level, and it's something I know about. Electronics, I studied it in college in physics, and I understand things like efficiency. And so what I did is I cured all of the problems that you would normally run into in the solar or the three-blade wind industry. I've cured those in the wing generator. Okay, so just a little bit of discussion there. But I want to prepare people, if you have a farm or a ranch or someplace out in the country, I'll tell you also that the biggest hindrance to people putting one in is zoning. So if you're out in the country, you'll probably be free from zoning issues, and you'll be able to put one in. The other issue I run into is some people don't have good wind. And in that case, that's a problem because we don't sell wind. If you don't have sufficient wind, there are cures for that, but it's really a difficult, very expensive cure. Let's put it that way. You have to have the wing is much bigger. You have to have gearing. It's just really a much more difficult issue. And so people with low wind, the best thing is to just wait until you can invest in a very big wind generator that'll be, say, offshore with a collective co-op type of investment. And so that's coming in the future. So, like I say, we don't sell wind. We sell wind generators, so people have to have good wind. They have to have zoning that allows a tall installation, something 40 to 60 feet in the air and without any issues. And then we can proceed. But those are the two biggest stumbling blocks for people trying to install. But the average person on a farm or a ranch does not have zoning issues. And a lot of times they have very good wind. So once you get past those two, then it's a matter of the money. You know, do you have money to invest in a system that is going to provide energy long term? That's the question. And, you know, so there's an expense involved. And so that's the other issue that sometimes I run in. People don't understand the expense involved in installation. We sell the wind generator, but then you have the installation cost. You have to, there's many things associated with that, wiring this into some kind of an electrical system that you're going to use. In that case, you need a certified electrician, registered electrician who's local, who's going to do the wiring, etc. And not many people have all the skills necessary to install a wind generator. The electronics, the physical part of it, etc. So there are extra costs. You have to have some professional help to install it, etc. And for these smaller ones, we want people to install them themselves. So that takes, but most people on a farm or a ranch, they're used to working with heavy equipment. So that's usually not an issue once again. Once you get down to the person on the farm or the ranch, they don't have a zoning issue. They have good wind. They are familiar with working with electronics and installing heavy equipment, etc. Then it's just a question of how much money is it going to cost? What do they want? And what I'm finding, too, is a lot of people would like electric car charging stations. And the reason is because everybody's moving to electric automobiles. All the major car manufacturers are moving towards electric automobiles. And so to put in your own home charging station where you're charging from the wind, all of a sudden your transportation bill is going to become very inexpensive over the upcoming years and decades. And so that's very important. That's something people really have to look at, putting in an investment right now that'll save you a lot of money in the future and allowing you to go to electric automobiles. And with electric pickup trucks on the market now, sport utility vehicles, and just regular automobiles, and the fact that you don't have maintenance on your automobile, the savings over the long term are going to be significant. Okay, I'm going to switch gears, going back to a topic I discussed a little bit earlier about the Tektites. And when you have a phenomenon like this, there sometimes are multiple causes. And so there are cases in which there have been known impacts. Something came in, hit Earth, and the impact threw Tektites out. These are little molten globules, basically. And they were found, like, say, embedded in animals at a distance. So they know that this was caused by the particular impact. So it's pretty well established that these are the result of impacts. But the question is, could there be another source of Tektites? And the answer is yes. And so as scientists roam around the Earth and they were touting this one that was supposedly recently found in Laos, they think, but they have to now dig down under a vast amount of lava, which is on top of the alleged crater, to see if, in fact, the crater is down below there. That's yet to be seen. But the other issue is, could these be caused also by electrical discharges? So my point is that once scientists get something in their brains that this is only due to a physical impact of a meteorite or an asteroid or something like that hitting Earth, then that's all they're looking for. I posted a photo on my Pictures of the Day subpage, which, by the way, I've not updated for a while. I've just been really busy. And so some of those fun things about maintaining my page, like finding pictures and giving explanations, have not had time. I don't have the advantage of those web pages that have government support coming in and people that are paid on a daily basis from the government to have pictures posted and descriptions coming with them, etc. I have to do all this myself. Like I say, my Picture of the Day page has not been updated recently, but on there I have a picture of something called the Eye of the Sahara. Now, you can look this up. It's a series of concentric circles in the Sahara Desert, big enough to see from outer space. And clearly, it's not the site of an impact. And so this is the site of an electrical discharge. Let's look at another issue when I was working with Russian scientists back in the mid-1990s. These are scientists, atmospheric scientists, who had been to the site at Tunguska, where there was supposedly some kind of event. There was an event, and I think it was, 1905, early 1900s. Tremendous explosion. Actually, there was a series of explosions, and it blew all the trees down. Everything is still in that same condition. And the belief was that this was due to an asteroid or some kind of impact. And what they realized is that there's nothing there. There's no hole in the ground. There's nothing. That because up in the Siberian tundra, things don't change quickly. So when they went back in the 1990s, everything was still the same. The trees were still blown down. And, you know, everything was pretty much the same. So they realized that this was some electromagnetic current, a discharge. And that's why they were very interested in my work, is because it explained how these discharges occur. It's not just from the atmosphere. It's coming in from something passing by. And the other interesting thing about the Tunguska event is that the people saw the sky brightening for days before and afterwards. So basically, the Earth was caught in a comet tail, and the comet object went by. It was like, from what I remember, it was early morning. So this is something where the people did not see the comet, but they saw the brightening of the sky, and then wham, this electrical discharge. And so the end result is that in the ground there are markings of an electrical discharge. You can measure the magnetic fields and other types of side effects, not the least of which would be tektites. So in the search for, as the scientists run around looking for holes in the ground caused by meteorites and asteroids and meteors, etc., then they're not looking for effects of electrical discharges, because in the standard scientific community, they don't believe in those. So once again, government-paid science running around looking in the wrong direction and not considering all the details. Okay, well, I have about a minute to go. I just want to remind you, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. The containers and the container structures are there. Just send me an email. There's information how to do this. Send me an email to the email address listed there. And just put containers in the subject line, and I'll send you information. These are brand new, never used shipping containers. You can have doors and windows put in at the factory and then have these delivered to your location. These are not one-time use. These are never, ever used shipping containers made at the factory and painted. Then, of course, the wing generator. I have New Mana Foods at very good prices with free shipping to the 48 states. And then the water filters, and I'm encouraging people to look at the whole house water filters. The sale is coming down by tomorrow. The sale will end. So if you're interested in a whole house water filter, they're still on 10% sale with free shipping. A few people have taken advantage of this in the last couple of days. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Remember, the whole house water filter, stop showering in that chemical soup. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.